Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Maya, nicknamed to be decided, Cole, today. So write in and give us suggestions for cool nicknames. Mission Control is already taken. Paul is on an adventure. We'll return soon. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Quick question, folks, as you are listening today. What are you looking at? What do you often do when you're listening to a podcast? A lot of our fellow listeners have written in to say, I listen to stuff they don't want you to know when I'm exercising or when I'm...
Doing housework.
Sure. Yeah. When I'm in the middle of another... smash and grab on a crime spree. We're kidding. Don't do crime sprees.
Yeah. A lot of it is about people doing hobbies, whatever their hobby is at their home. They're listening to a podcast. Ben and I, off of mic, just had a discussion about us working or on a computer or playing a video game even with on mute while listening to podcasts.
Sure.
But what do your eyes do while you're busying your ears with us?
Wow. Yeah. After doing some research on this, I actually started wearing sunglasses in the studio, at least for today's episode.
That's not just for like to look awesome and be like slightly intimidating?
I don't, you know, I'm flattered, but I think most people just find it annoying. But it's honestly, it's a bit freakish what we're exploring today, and we would like you to be part of this conversation. So as we always like to say at the top of the show, if you have something you want to let us know immediately, post haste, before you forget, and you're like, I don't have time to write out an email. I need to hop on the horn right now. Well, you, my friend, are in luck because you can call us directly.
We are 1-833-STDWYTK.
Yes, that's our number. Call in right now. Leave a message. Tell us anything you want.
You have 3 minutes. And remember, if you do not wish to be identified on air, that's all jolly good. Just explicitly tell us that.
Or if you just want to tell us something and you don't want it to go on air at all, tell us that too.
Or, you know, use one of those voice disguisers that serial killers use. That's entirely up to you and on your dime.
Serial killers. Or
whatever, you
know.
That's
profiling.
That's fair. That's fair. Here's a thing we never mentioned at the top of the show that I would like to today. If you would be so kind, please leave us a review on whatever podcast platform of choice allows you to do so. Preferably Apple Podcasts, I think is what they're calling it these days. Say something nice. It helps with the algorithm. It helps raise the profile of the show. And honestly, considering how many people listen to the show, the number of reviews we have is a travesty. So help us with that.
Yes, vote your conscience, please. So before you heard our weird voices coming through your ear holes, you probably heard an ad. Maybe mm-hmm. it was a promotion for one of our many new podcasts. Maybe it was some offer to go to a website like Great Courses or something like that. A long time ago, years and years back, Matt, you and I had an unsuccessful experiment. We've had many experiments.
Ah, yes.
You remember this, right?
Yes, I do.
Years ago, we decided, when we were looking at big data and advertising in general in these, our modern days, to try and count every single ad we saw in the space of one day. And we failed.
Yeah, because eventually you just give up.
I lost count after 200.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and I remember we had lengthy discussion about what constitutes an ad.
Right.
Is a logo, like just a singular logo without any other words or a picture that represents a company, is that an ad?
I would argue yes. Yeah.
I think so too. And in that case, we weren't even counting correctly because there were so many of those that we encounter every day.
Although the nature of who pays for the ad or how the ad is distributed probably should be on the table. Because if I have an Adidas hoodie – I paid money for that Adidas hoodie because I think it's cool, but it's also technically an ad for Adidas. And they didn't buy it, though. I paid them for the privilege of wearing their ad.
Right. You paid them for the privilege of advertising for them.
That's right.
So congrats.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I usually am adverse to many brands. But you know, that's the nature of the beast, right? People mm-hmm. like those identifiers. Ads are not necessarily a terrible thing. It would be ridiculous for us to argue that on this show, right? Because there will be an ad here at some point. However, ads are so ubiquitous, advertisement in some form. Every day, most of us are surrounded by institutions, technologies, and various groups that try ardently to collect as much information about us as possible and then analyze it 6 ways from Sunday. And, you know, often they get things hilariously wrong. Like, You've probably had this thing where you order something that's maybe a one-time purchase. You get like a toilet seat replacement or whatever. And then the next thing you know, for a week or two, you're inundated with these ads for toilet seats. Like you're some kind of regular toilet seat enthusiast. Like you're some sort of addict. And Facebook is thinking, well, if we just keep showing them the ad, like what are they going to do? Are they going to say, just one more? I'll treat myself, I guess.
This guy's on a custom toilet seat kick right now. We really got to flood him while the iron's hot.
Or you buy a car and they're like, you know what this person who just bought a Corvette needs? 3 more Corvettes.
Yeah. Just wait until you have a child, Ben. One day you're going to have a child. I can foresee it. I've had a prophecy. And when you have a child, you realize just how many ads are thrown at you about having a baby.
Yeah. And it gets pretty invasive, right? There are not as many privacy safeguards as one would expect when it comes to the world of data aggregation. We always talk about the famous and completely true, by the way, folks, story about Target predicting a pregnancy in such a way that surprised the parents of the expecting mother. At times, advertising now, especially in the digital space, can feel close to telepathy or an attempt at it,
mm-hmm.
but it's not quite there yet. And that is what today's episode is about in large part. So here are the facts. It's no secret that advertisers are infamous for their relentless pursuit to learn everything they can about you, no matter who you are, in the hopes of selling you something at some point.
Yeah, but there's this one thing that's always eluded all of their efforts and all of these companies and how much time and money they've spent on this. And it is your physical bodily reaction to everything that they're doing, to the ads that they're putting in front of your face, to the how bright, how dark, like what color, all of these things. They cannot tell precisely how you're reacting in real time.
Which, just to give you a sense of the stakes here and how much information these organizations would like to collect, if you had for some reason, I'm not making fun of anybody, if you had for some reason a physical reaction where you had like a little anxiety fart every time you saw something,
yeah,
they would want to know that. Sure. Yes, 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 just so.
Well, that was one.
That was one. There's not really a limit for data collectors. There's not a moment where they would say, well, this is too much. We're getting a little weird. Right now, whether we're talking billboards or banners or, you know, ads on your phone or your freemium game or whatever you're playing, advertisers have always had to rely on other indicators to see whether they could grab someone's attention. So they know, for instance, in a YouTube ad or something where you have 5 seconds before you can click,
yeah,
right? They know that you are doing something during those 5 seconds, but are you paying attention to the ad or are you, you know, like, oh, I'm going to, I don't know, drink soda.
Well, yeah, especially just that concept, if you're looking, if let's say you're using your phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got YouTube playing, a YouTube ad comes up. How are they going to know if you're actually looking at that ad or just looking somewhere else while it's playing or even putting your phone down?
Right.
Now, there are ways on most smartphones to tell if you've put it down, if you've turned the screen off, if you've clicked, they definitely know, if you've done anything like that. But as of right now, nobody is, well, at least, oh God, we're about to get into it, but
go for it.
Nobody's using the camera to actually look at you while you're looking at it.
Officially. There are hacks aplenty, and who reads their terms of service? You know what I mean? Who does? I had an old friend professor at a local university here who was a graphic design guy, and he was working on a project to make terms of service in those agreements more readable.
Oh.
Like a really cool thing that automatically sorted the stuff you should be concerned about and popped it up at the top.
That's really great and nice and cool.
His funding was pulled.
Oh.
Yeah, there's just not an incentive for it. Yeah. So here's a little experiment that we found in Slate. And we want you to think about this just for a moment. Don't do this if you're driving. If you're in the middle of like your MMA training or whatever, wait till you have a safe place to sit down.
Oh, wait, and I've got an idea. If you can find a mirror,
mm-hmm.
look into that mirror while we read off this this list.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't this interesting? Because
that's
a little
really
different.
Good. Yeah.
It's we're mixing the senses here in the reaction, but we just want to see if you notice anything.
Okay, so consider for a moment, mirrors at the ready, the following list.
Republican.
Abortion.
Democrat.
Future.
Afghanistan.
Healthcare.
Same-sex marriage. Now, we've tried, I think, all of us to just say these as straight as we can, just like say the word without trying to add too much to it. But we want to know if you've noticed that there was there any reaction in your face when you heard any of those words?
Maybe a dilation of the pupils at one point, right? Or a narrowing. Maybe your eyes flicked in one direction or another. Did you notice a blink that ordinarily would have passed you by? There is a tremendous, profound, enormous amount of information reflected in the way you just read that list. If you read it written down or if you're watching your own reactions.
Honestly, we don't know exactly how it's going to be if you just hear it precisely, but for certain, there was some kind of reaction.
Well, sound's a tremendously powerful thing. I learned a cool fact about sound. This is a total tangent.
Okay.
Is it? Okay. So this came to us from Will Pearson, a friend of the show and a host of our podcast, Part-Time Genius. Will kicked a couple studies to us that showed sound can affect your experiences in subconscious ways that you are not going to be aware of. If you are eating, for instance, stale Pringles potato chips and someone is playing the sounds of some crunchy thing,
yes,
then your brain will believe that the chips themselves are fresh and not stale.
Brilliant.
And this is – it's so easy to affect people's sensory input. But here's what happened. When you – if you read those words that we just intoned, then you may notice that your eyes paused for a fraction of a second on certain words. And this is definitely true for most of us because we put in some phrases that could be considered oppositional, right? Mm-hmm. Democrat, Republican. Same-sex marriage, et cetera. These things can be divisive for some people in the U.S. And probably what was happening was our brains, as we read along, were trying to connect these things, even though they just exist independently, right, as fragments of a sentence. But did your pupils dilate a little bit while you were reading the list? At which word? You know, did you blink at a different rate? Did you backtrack to reread any words? And if so, which ones, when, and how long? Eye tracking can show you all of this if you are an advertiser or even more disturbingly, a government. This concept has also been called the Holy Grail of advertising. It uses the image from one or more cameras to capture changes in movements and structure of our eyes, and it can measure all of these things with scary Orwellian accuracy.
Yeah.
That's where we're at right now. that's right now. It hasn't really mainstreamed yet.
Well, yeah, it's still one of those technologies and approaches that you basically have to do it in an environment where you're testing right now. Because can you imagine right now if, let's say, everyone right now that has an Apple phone, some kind of Apple phone, mm-hmm. it just rolls out and Apple lets you know, hey, just so you know, your front-facing camera is going to be watching you at all times. Whenever you're looking at your phone, it's going to be tracking exactly what your eyes are doing and it's going to be taking that data and sending it back to Apple.
Do you think they'll keep Siri as the branding or do you think they'll make a new ostensibly friendly entity for that? It's like, you know, every time you pull up your phone, if you don't have time to type, don't worry. Danny can tell what you're looking at, and Danny will help you.
I feel like Siri has been looked at as kind of a flop anyway, so maybe it's time to rebrand.
Siri has been doing some great work for memes, though.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Just like the meme economy.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know how.
I don't know any Siri memes.
I don't use Siri in
real life.
Thought
I was up on the memes.
So wait. Okay. I'm trying to think about your question.
Sure.
With Siri and what it's going to be, and it definitely feels like a Black Mirror episode. We were just talking with our producers out there, Maya and Seth, by the way, shadow producer Seth.
That's
over there.
That's right. Hey, Seth.
It's literally his first day.
It's his first day, yeah.
And we were talking with him about how Black Mirror, this topic in this mm-hmm. episode is. I'm trying to get back to what I was going to talk about. I got lost on Seth there for a second. Okay, so We were discussing how Siri as a thing feels like it will be what the new phone is. It won't be like a phone. It will be a Siri. Or, does that make
I
sense?
See. Yes, yes.
Some kind of personified thing that exists that you just interact with as another being.
Something approaching AI as a personal assistant.
That's what it feels like, but it'll just be that the device you have on you at all times.
And eye tracking would be a fundamental piece of that. Again, this stuff is not a theory. This is not necessarily alarmist. We're working to stay away from being too scary about mm-hmm. this. But this is where we are right now. And we'll pause for a word from our sponsors.
Yeah.
And we'll tell you what's happening pretty soon, sooner than you think.
Yeah, make sure you do not pause. Just listen all the way through this and keep your eyes as open and stare as straight as you can forward while listening to the sponsor.
Yeah, take your hands, take your pointer fingers and your thumbs and hold
ratchet
your eyes
open. And let's see where everybody is.
I feel silly. No one can see us doing this.
We both did it, though.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
We're back. And before we vilify eye tracking, which, you know, honestly, I am totally down to do, we should mention that it's not an inherently evil or bad thing, right? There are some advantages.
Yeah, so for folks who are into this technology, there is an enormous benefit for people who have disabilities or, for example, the creation of immersive games. But how far does it go? And what are the implications? These are the answers that may disturb you.
Definitely.
Here's where it gets crazy. You're absolutely right. Okay, first, the argument about disabilities is entirely compelling and valid. If someone is, for example, paralyzed below their neck, then they'll rely on mouth movements maybe, or there are already forms of eye tracking, I believe, that exist in order for them to maybe type with their eyes or something like that. This takes it to another level. And it could be of tremendous and significant benefit to these people. It also is, as you said, Noel, it's probably great for VR games.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't tried it, but
it could be incredible. Instead of having to move
your
head.
Neck, right? Yeah, it would make a lot of sense.
Also, I don't plan to. I wear sunglasses all the time, but it's not because the lights are too bright. It's because I already, in real life, don't want people to know where I'm looking. You know what I mean? I can't handle taking that to a digital realm.
It's all good, man.
Well, here we are. Right now, eye tracking can seem like a lovely, nice convenience, but the implications are far-reaching and, to many, deeply disturbing and deeply concerning at the very least. And we're always really careful to separate our opinions from the facts. So I will say it. We always try to be very explicit about this. It is my opinion that this is a bad thing. And I'm glad to defend why. Because usually the three of us are on the same page. But if there's a disagreement, I want to be persuaded that this is overall a good thing. I don't buy it.
Okay, well, I'm going to go into it as though, just for funsies, that I believe that it's the greatest thing ever, and we have to institute it just to make sure that we know everything about you that we need to know.
That we need to know.
Yes. We, all of us.
Right. Well, first things first, as we said, this isn't theoretical. It is happening. There is virtually no government oversight. Zero government oversight.
Sounds good. Sounds like something the private entities want.
And that's a larger trend we're seeing, you know, private control or private subversion of things that once existed as legal oversight in the governmental sphere. For example, there used to be the Do Not Call list. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I was on it.
It's still a thing, right?
It is, but does it work anymore?
No, I guess it doesn't, does it? I mean, I've had people who, you know, when you call and it's a human, that's the problem though, right? Now more often than not, it's a robot. Mm. So you can't really yell at a robot and say, put me on your do not call list, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And we have to ask ourselves, does the do not call list still exist? I mean, these kinds of intrusions are becoming more and more frequent and more invasive. And really, private industry is leading the charge. Apple has filed a patent for a three-dimensional eye-tracking user interface. There's a European company called Sensei. Get it?
Yep.
Because it's like an eye. They worked on that. it wants to have eye-tracking software baked into smartphones very soon. And as this stuff becomes increasingly deployed in your laptops, in your tablets, in your phones, and
in your TVs that have cameras,
in your freezer, in your smart refrigerator, this will open a new front in the debate over privacy as it stands now. Privacy is very much an endangered species.
Yeah. We talked about it as a good thing with respect to virtual reality, game playing, or whatever, however else you're going to be using VR or AR glasses, like the old Google Glass or some of the new prototypes that are coming out. Eye tracking will pretty much in the near future enable all these companies to collect your most intimate and, I mean, for the most part, subconscious or unconscious responses to the entire world around you. Any and all stimuli, they will have cameras facing at you so long and at all times that literally everything you encounter will be recorded.
I thought we weren't going to go dystopian this time around.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, this is okay, I'm supposed to be the one who's positive for this, right? I'm not going to have any kind of existential breakdown right now about this. It's fine.
I'll do it. We can switch sides if you want.
Can we switch sides?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Here. Let's see. Let me take a swing at this on the positive side. All right. So, eye tracking technology. My position now is that it's great.
Okay.
It is superb. It's top notch. Because it helps advertising become more effective.
Okay, and so I'm only going to see the ads that really do pertain or interest to me?
Right. So you're looking at your phone or you're looking at your tablet or your laptop, and advertisers receive this feedback that say, oh, Matt Frederick's eyes lingered for a few seconds on an advertisement, but then he didn't click on it. So how does he really feel about, you know, toilet seats or Corvettes? How did Matt's eyes move as he looked at an ad? What did he look at first? Should we prioritize that in the future, right? Should we bring the Corvette more in the forefront?
Okay.
Are there certain words, phrases, or topics that are things Matt Frederick loves?
Mm-hmm.
Or are there things that are super, like, turnoffs for him? Like, whenever he sees something that mentions Velcro, he's like, screw this, burn the system down, I'm going outside.
Yeah, or pickled okra, like, get out of here.
Get out of here with
just
that.
Just don't even put that on my phone.
So then this means that successive ad campaigns will be more tailored to you. The argument on paper is probably something like, they're more organic, or they're integrated, or that, wait, I'm going back to my real side. Hang on.
Yeah.
Or they're less invasive because it's something that you are predispositioned to show an interest in.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm coming back on your side now. So when companies are trying to figure out what kinds of stories we want to hear about, what kinds of movies and television should be produced, they can think about all of these different things in a giant cloud of words and phrases that they can mix together and make me the stories that I want to see. That's great.
And the way they're able to do this is through the collection and preservation, the hoarding, it'd be fair to say, of the data they collect from the, again, largely unconscious movement of your eyes and largely uncontrollable. So we're talking about millions of people's eyeball footprints, for lack of a better word, and then hundreds, probably thousands of companies in the near to mid future who will collect this across the digital ecosystem. What will they do with all that information? Whatever they want.
Yay!
That is ultimately the answer. That's probably, I mean, there will be people who want to split some hairs over it, but ultimately, whatever they want.
Well, it's like anything else on the internet, right? I mean, it's all of the stuff that you pump into Facebook knowingly, knowing that that is what pays for your privilege to use Facebook. It's just going to get more and more specific. Before you know it, we're going to have like biometric scanning that we're agreeing to allow be processed. And we have no way of knowing what the end results are or the end user is going to do with that information.
Psst, anybody that works at MailChimp already gave that stuff over.
That's right.
Well, that's the thing too. Like, for example, this is a little bit off the subject, but it's similar. Like when marijuana was recreationally legalized for the first time, like in Los Angeles, and probably even when it was, prescription, you had to let them scan your ID. You had to let them scan your ID into some database, mm-hmm. and you don't really have any control over what they do with that. It gives you the privilege of buying marijuana legally, but you're sort of rolling the dice as to, is this going to come back and bite me in the ass if it's not legal in my state? Like, there's all kinds
right.
of different things.
Or what if you get a job at a federal organization
Absolutely.
Or something, you know?
And you know, they're doing the same thing with nicotine sales in Georgia right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they're proposing it. I think it's not officially in place yet, but it's being done in some places here in Georgia where if you buy any nicotine product, they scan your ID. Mm-hmm. And imagine the implications of that. Then it goes back to your healthcare provider or
sure.
something and all of that.
It's like Flannery O'Connor said, all that rises must converge, right?
Yeah.
But now in a really uncool way. Sorry, Flannery. Yes.
But also
is,
thank you
true.
For saying that, Flannery O'Connor.
Yeah. So this is true, and that's an excellent point. The purpose is to aggregate this and get as close to predictive potential as possible. In theory, this stuff would be anonymous data they would describe as non-personal, but in practice, it's going to be very easy to penetrate the anonymity of that. Because think about it. Your eye movements will be largely unique. They will be largely tied to a device that is already identified with you, your smartphone, right? When the GPS is trackable as well, so they know mm-hmm. where you are when you're looking at things. Sort of like Uber, I believe it was Uber, is using some of that same technology to float the idea of a system or a function in their software where they can not pick up people who have been drinking, which to me sort of defeats the purpose of a lot of Uber rides. But they can see and they'll say, okay, well, this person is calling a ride, but their phone says they've been at this place for, 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it's a bar or something.
And you're just like, I'm not picking up that drunk patron.
Right. Or something like that. But again, that's what Uber drivers and Uber customers have signed on for. I'm just saying there's a lot that we can get from phones and these other similar devices that you might not suspect. And now this is going to kick it up to an entirely new level. Eye tracking from tablets and smartphones is tied to a unique device identifier associated with one specific device. So maybe they don't know that your full name is Noel Brown or Matt Frederick or Maya Cole. But they will know that it is, an AT&T iPhone 6S or whatever.
And they'll know where it is.
So because this ties into location tracking information, it can also tie to the locations that you show up at all the time, right? Most of these studies are being on this eye tracking stuff are being conducted in closed environments, but the technology is already, it's already been out there. What we're telling you about is not just happening. It already happened. All those rumors that you've been reading about regarding Facebook's microphone being on or something like that, it's quite possible that you already unknowingly have an app or some piece of software on some electronic device that is trying to do something like this with your eyes.
Yeah, and, you know, just as Ben said, when we come back after this quick sponsor break, we're going to talk about how towards the end there, how this is literally like one tiny cut, right, of the thousand cuts that we're giving ourselves that will eventually bring about the gray goo.
Gray goose?
I'm just kidding. Don't worry. I'm just saying that the machines will be taking over really soon, and eye tracking is just one tiny part. Here is our sponsor.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
The singularity, right?
That's it.
Yeah, nanobots.
We're talking about premium vodka here, gents.
The Grey Goose.
Yeah, the Grey Goose.
The Grey Goose.
The goose. You got to get that goose.
Get goosed. You're here first if you've never heard of vodka. Okay, well, let's...
It's that potato juice, right?
Yeah. It's that sweet Moscow potato juice.
Delicious.
Let's just start calling vodka that. Can we call it Moscow potato juice?
Drink responsibly and only if you're over 21 or wherever the legal age is in whatever country you reside.
Or if you're in Russia and whatever age.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Or don't drink alcohol.
That's also a thing
you can do. That's the thing.
Cranberry juice.
You can just eat the potato. I feel like we helped a lot of people with that.
I think we did too.
That's good.
That should be a shirt though. I like that. You can just eat the potato.
Hey guys, where did your eyes go when we just started talking about potatoes and vodka and all that stuff? What happened to your eyes? We need to know. Send us your metrics, please.
Wow. Oh, please feel free to not do that.
Okay.
Because we don't want to be held responsible. It turns out that there are many applications for this eye tracking technology, and this is incredibly dicey, ethically fraught territory. We talked about cracking privacy. It's going to be easier than ever once this stuff is out and mainstreamed, and it's fully acknowledged as the new normal. You're just going to have to treat everything you do as though it is a matter of public record, at least online. But there's another more troubling thing I would argue, which is the concept of pre-crime. Remember Minority Report?
Yes.
Yes, this could happen. As a matter of fact, it is happening. That's the thing that I keep trying to emphasize here.
Is that the gray goo you're talking about? The goo that the precogs are floating around in?
That's it.
Is it?
No. I was talking about the nano.
Nanobots functioning as like the philosopher's stone, right? It's transformative.
Exactly. It can create whatever it wants, but it could also just cover the earth if it continues to replicate without any controller. But
where's the goo?
It's like a gray substance, like a gooey substance of nanobots that
it's a thought project, they kind of flow.
Yeah. I get it.
Uh-huh. It's not real yet.
Yet. But we do know that, we have to do my, when did Minority Report come out? Are we past the statute?
99?
Okay.
Early 2000?
So we're solid. But anyway, spoiler alert, here be spoilers after the countdown, 3, 2, 1.
2002.
Spoilers. So in Minority Report, and we've all seen this film, in case you haven't seen it, Tom Cruise attempts to act as a member of law enforcement in the near future in a pre-crime division. And the way that the pre-crime works is the precognitive triplets that you mentioned earlier, right, Noel? They have these dreams while they float in this pool, and their dreams are inscribed on these little wooden balls.
Yeah, I think so.
And then Tom Cruise reads them and then attempts to stop a crime before it occurs.
Yeah.
Right now, that's still kind of sci-fi, but not as sci-fi as you might think.
All the while manipulating things on kind of a holographic touchscreen.
Yeah, like a haptic.
Which is largely the way we use tablets and stuff now. That's sort of pre-cogged, you know, our use of touchscreens.
There we go. Yeah. So where are we at in real life with pre-crime? Yes, it is a thing. We have to recognize that although companies and private organizations will take the brunt of criticism for this, law enforcement and security will have big roles to play. And this becomes very dangerous when we talk about more harsh nation states. Researchers in the US and the UK have mapped the correlation between blink rates, pupil dilation, and deceptive statements already, right?
Yeah.
This is like a polygraph if a polygraph actually worked. So the Department of Homeland Security has already been developing a pre-crime program aimed at identifying criminals before they act.
Yikes.
Seth.
Yeah, Seth. We knew it before you even got in the room, buddy. We're totally joking, of course. Seth is wonderful, although we have only met him for the first time today.
That's true, but I feel a connection. I'm having like a Cloud Atlas moment.
You okay, yeah. Really cool. I see him out there. He's, he's looking. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Maya solid the whole time, I can tell.
Okay. So it's true, though. This DHS program is called, in a burst of creativity, Future Attribute Screening Technology.
Oh.
Or FAST. Huh? That was for you.
Hey, thanks, man. You know I'm a real acronym buff.
So what is FAST? What does it do?
It's when things move at an alarming rate of speed.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Essentially what's going to be happening here very soon. But yeah, this program is designed to take images, analyze them, specifically at airport security checkpoints.
Which is already being instituted. Those facial scans, mm-hmm. Have you guys seen them? If you travel fairly often, as we do here, then you'll notice they've become sort of the way that Sesame Credit was originally instituted. It was opt-in, and now it's mandatory.
Yeah, and it's just to literally scan your face and your eyes and what they're doing as you're going through the airport. And through the security process and all the other things, just to see if are they doing any kind of weird movement? Is there any kind of like what is your eye position and your gaze at any given time? What are you staring at? Are you looking at the security guards? Are you looking at this certain bag? Mm-hmm. Are you giving off any kind of facial expressions that would seem suspicious? Are you just
Why are you breathing so heavy? Were you running?
That's it. Is your heart rate elevated right now? Why is your heart rate up so high? It's just the dogs that are walking past right now checking everybody's
right.
bags.
Right.
It's fine.
So this is a very controversial application of this because, yes, we could say that this has the potential to prevent crime and save lives, right? For instance, America has a tremendous ongoing and tragic problem with mass shootings, which occur at a cartoonish and fundamentally offensive rate, one being too many.
Yeah.
Well, so in theory, like if there were cameras set up in the way that could do eye tracking in a public space and someone was being what one might describe as shifty,
sure.
as in darting their eyes around at a weird, you know, mm-hmm. kind of clip, that might be a flag?
Right. So that's the question. Could this prevent those sorts of tragedies? It's weird because it's tough to argue this. Let's say, for instance, that someone snaps and they go to a public place with guns or maybe an explosive or something, but they're clocked by a camera and then they're arrested. Well, unless they wrote down or publicly stated what their intent was, they would just have a legal possession of a firearm. You know what I mean? And so how can we prove what would have happened would have happened?
That's why pre-crime doesn't work, right?
Not yet, yeah.
It basically amounts to depriving someone of due process.
That's a good point, yeah, yeah. And the technology always outpaces the legislation. It's something that we see time and time and time again. But the effects go beyond the computer screen as well. Researchers are testing a new product called Sideways. And Sideways can track what products catch your attention on the shelves in a local brick-and-mortar store.
I have seen this.
Really? At a grocery store or something?
I don't know if it's this particular like Sideways TM version, mm-hmm. but where there will be a camera set up in a specific aisle where – you know, it looks as though it could just be for security purposes to check and see maybe if you're in a grocery store and there's a security camera right next to some of the medications or something, maybe a hot ticket item that's expensive and small, right?
Okay.
But I swear to you, it's got – not only is the camera set up there, it's got the display right there and it says it's recording while it's doing it. And again, it could be just CCTV, mm-hmm. but why would you not take something like that and then be looking at how people like are their eyes and how they're looking at things and how they're reacting. Because as a security officer, you could probably ascertain whether something wrong is going on
mm-hmm.
by using the same things DHS is doing. Why would Kroger – oh, sorry, I said it. Why would Kroger or Publix or one of these other big companies not – be working with some advertising company to have data on that stuff?
Absolutely, yeah. The overhead investment is just pinto beans in comparison to you know, the possible profit potential.
And is that the kind of thing you would have to opt out of, or could you even opt out of it if you didn't even know what was going on, right?
Right. Where's the informed consent?
Yeah,
you're exactly. In the store.
You're in the store, but that could be one of those things where it's like, okay, let's say I go to a music festival and there are signs saying, by the very fact that you are putting yourself in this environment, you are de facto consenting to be filmed.
Right, right, right.
Which maybe doesn't hold up in court. I don't know. That's
it, it does in public, like if we're walking down the street.
Is it public, though, if it's a gated thing that you paid money to go into? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess it's up to them then.
Right. I just wonder how this would work. Obviously, we're not there yet, but I think this begs the question of, like, how responsible do these companies have to be to let people know that this is going on, this kind of data collection is going on?
Cough, not very. Yeah, they do. I mean, there's not too much oversight. At least, like, let's go back to this sideways or stuff like sideways. Mm-hmm. So you walk up to the item. Let's see, you're deciding between the store brand, we have cereal at home type of cereal.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're going to splurge and get the
Kashi.
Yeah, get the Kashi. There you go. You're like, I earned it. I earned this fiber or whatever. That's how you party. Mm-hmm. You're that person. And the grocery store has this system that will look at not just what you ended up getting, but will tell us a little bit about the decision process you went through, what's called the decision tree that led you to Kashi, right? And from that, you will probably have some sort of linked contact avenue, right? You'll get more – even if you don't sign up for the whatever Kroger app or something, you will be able to get targeted ads through Instagram, for instance. And eye tracking is going to be huge for Instagram. What kind of stuff can people learn about you from your eye movements? This is where things become very dangerous, possibly fatal, and we'll explain why. So it shows not just what you're focusing on, but the order of operations that mm-hmm. you use when thinking through a visual stimulus, both where you tend to look in general. Like, does this person tend to – do you read the captions first or something? Which nobody does. Or what you tend to look at and look for specifically, right?
Are you just looking at the price? Is that how you're shopping?
Right.
Are you looking at the name brand?
Mm-hmm. Is the appearance of a certain thing or keyword more likely to sway you toward buying something?
Is a bright color standing out to the majority of people who walk up to this section of the store?
Does someone just have to slap Tom Cruise's face on anything and you will buy it?
Yes.
I thought when you said that, I was just picturing somebody slapping Tom Cruise's face when he jumps up on the couch on Oprah. It's like, get off my couch, Tom Cruise. Were you raised in a barn? This is not where your feet belong, sir. Go home.
Were you raised in a land where all the floors are couches?
That sounds like a lovely place.
I feel
like you twist an ankle a lot. You'd end up stepping between the cushions, and then you'd go down. At least it'd be nice and soft when you went down.
It's got like an Ottoman vibe, right. You know, Ottoman Empire.
The Ottoman Empire. Oh, my God, that's too good.
Is it. Oh, we got there.
No.
All right,
we're
there. That's our show.
Oh, clearly.
Got to end big.
All right, but wait, there's one last thing here that we haven't even talked about yet, and this blows my mind. Just by looking at your eyes, something like sideways – Ben, who I'm speaking to, Ben, and he's covering his eyes with his very dark sunglasses.
Yes.
But just by looking at your pupils, these companies will be able to tell if you're having an emotional reaction to anything on that shelf.
Yeah. Kind of reminds you of the Blade Runner test, right? Remember that? Like, there's a turtle. It's on its back. It can't get up.
I have a question. Yes. Can you guys tell by looking at my eyes right now that I'm tripping balls on acid right now?
Wait.
I cannot.
Good.
Hold on. I'm seeing a little melting.
Mm-hmm. No, that's just how I look.
Oh, is that my acid?
Mm, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
I have a new pitch. If you're encountering too much Tom Cruise in your life, we should have something to leverage all this. Let's leverage all this crazy invasive technology for good. If you are seeing too much of Tom Cruise in something, I propose we add the option of Tom Cruise control. Which will just lower his – guys, all right.
That should at the very least be a plug-in for like Google Chrome or something, you know, just to strip Tom Cruise from the internet. I support that, actually.
That's not nice, you guys.
I know. He's probably the nicest guy.
And he does his own stunts, and he's like 3 feet tall. But he's a Lilliputian, you guys. He's completely harmless.
He's bantam, and he has a lot of energy. You know?
I love your use of that
but
word,
he's bantam. OT, like, what, 17 at this point?
He's basically a god.
Yes, he can materialize, dematerialize, do whatever he needs to do.
His thetans got kicked out, you know, years ago.
Just be careful. He's probably in the room with
us
right now.
He can stop your heart with one smoldering glance.
Yes.
I don't know why I was 1,000,000% with you there, but I felt that passionately, Noel. I was like, yeah, don't mess around with him. Anyway.
But think about that. It can measure your emotional reaction to anything.
Right. So it could – we're joking about this Tom Cruise control thing, but it could do something like that wherein it says, okay, we're going to remove the following things from a normal ad.
Yeah.
Because this will make so-and-so more likely to buy. Kashi, right? This is the really dangerous part.
Yeah, here it comes.
Yeah, not just the emotional reaction, but multiple studies confirm that someone's sexual orientation can be very easily discerned from observing their eye movements when exposed to certain images. So,
or at least their overall attraction, right?
Right, right, exactly. And this seems to be proven across virtually every kind of orientation one might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that the rules for our eyes apply across the board.
Yes.
This is dangerous because in some countries, it is a crime to have certain sexual orientations, right?
And the ideologies of certain groups. And you think about power and how it can change hands and all these things. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty terrifying technology.
Right, especially when you consider that not too long ago in various countries across the world, for instance, being attracted to people the same sex was an automatic prison sentence, if not effectively a death sentence.
Yeah.
Right?
And that still remains in places across the world today.
So imagine that you're flying in to this country. You know, going on vacation. Just name a country. I don't want to pick on any specific one. And then you are stopped at customs, which is normal. They look at your passport. They may have a connection with Five Eyes or Interpol to make sure you're not an international taffy thief or whatever. And then they deny you entry because of some kind of test or facial scan or some data they had from you.
Literally just walking in.
Yeah, walking in or looking at people on Instagram or something or on Facebook or whatever, have you.
Or maybe on the displays on the plane that you rode in on.
Insidious. I like it. Yeah. Also maybe just data collected from the TV you're watching that is also watching you.
Yeah.
Which is the best place to put these things, TVs and phones. Yep. So this means that someone without their informed consent could suffer legal consequences for something that is not a crime in their home country, right? Or something that really isn't. It's other people's business, if we're being honest.
Hmm.
So this leads us to our conclusion for today, which is really opening the door to more questions. At what price convenience? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What are the advantages? Are you for this? Are you against it? Or as we say in the South, are you for it or against it? If so, why? And if you are one of those people who accepts the argument that if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to hide. If you're one of those people who's on that side, we would love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your reasoning why. Maybe this is a necessary evil to some of us. Maybe the benefits ultimately outweigh the disadvantages, right? Either way, no matter how you feel about it. If you're 100% on board, 100% opposed, it's happening.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's kind of like not liking the weather. The weather doesn't care what you think about it. And the companies pursuing this eye tracking technology don't really care what you think about it either. The money got too good and the potential is there. It's Pandora's jar. The lid has been unscrewed and that lid only, it doesn't go back up.
Wow. You're correct, Ben. Well, here's what you may be thinking, because this is certainly a thought I had. I'm sitting here with a cell phone that has the front-facing camera covered by just a terrible-looking piece of duct tape. But that's just how I roll because I'm, you know, like you listening out there, I'm aware of some of these things. You may think, well, what I'll do is I'll just cover all the cameras that I'm aware of that I can, and that way nobody will be able to tell what my eyes are doing, at least in my own home, right, wherever I reside.
Because the only other solution is to wear sunglasses all the time, and people don't, you know, people think something's up.
But it does look cool on you, Ben. I wish it, okay.
We all look really cool in sunglasses. I like, Noel's got some sunglasses with white frames. Those are
keep them on my my little neck, my neck piece here.
Nice.
When I say neck piece, I mean my diamonds, my diamond-encrusted icy
I see it.
Piece.
There. I like it because it's kind of like a tie analog.
Well, the way it catches the light, too, you know? Mm-hmm. It really catches the eye and the light.
Well, and in this instance, I can see myself in your chest, which mm-hmm. is an odd mm-hmm. feeling.
Yeah, it's important. It's sort of a power move, really.
Yeah.
And Matt, you look like a cop with your glasses.
Oh, really?
You have like these aviators, right?
No, they're just the old school sunglasses.
Who is that guy then?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I think I'm being followed by a police officer who looks like you.
Yes, it's working.
Finally, the dream. But yeah, this stuff is happening, and it is tempting to think that there are more low-tech solutions. Like, hey, guys, stop freaking out. Just put some tape over your camera.
No problem.
Which obviously we do, but that is not going to work in the future.
No.
Right. Apple also had a patent application, as well as other technology companies, to have display screens that include thousands of tiny image sensors built into the screen itself.
Yeah. So if you are looking at the screen, it would be looking at you.
I was about to say, you look into the abyss looks back at you, my friends.
Here's the crazy part.
Mm.
This filing, this patent that Apple filed that for, do you know what year it was from, Noel? Can you want to take a guess?
No.
It was a display.
1993.
2004.
Wow.
But seriously, though, think about when the iPhone came out. Think about like how often we've been using phones since then and the technology behind it. Apple filed a patent for that in 2004.
Well, okay. I never thought I would say this on this show. But in Apple's defense, a lot of times technology companies just file a patent as kind of a way of calling shotgun.
No, totally. I get that. I totally get that.
Or they file patents to suppress technology.
Or the government does that a whole
bunch. Which
has
actually happened. God, we keep saying the government, and that's my bad. Specifically
Big G.
The U.S. government. Yeah, heavy G. It is true that there is a law on the books wherein if you file for a patent that is considered to be a threat to national security, you will lose your patent. It will become property of the U.S. government. It will be removed. You automatically get a gag order preventing you from ever speaking about what happened.
Yeah, it can also happen if the government already has a secret patent for one of those things.
Oh, yeah, secret patents. That's cheating. I get it.
Yeah.
I would do the same thing in their position. But anyhow, here we are. This stuff is not being suppressed. This is proliferating, spreading like wildfire to a cell phone near you. So the question is, what next? What to do? Do we fight against this new way of aggregating data? I mean, have you ever been reading something online and thought, wow, it's crazy that I can have my own thought about this and it still be private? The last sacrosanct thing in the human experience now is just the mind. Mm-hmm. That's it.
You know, I think what's going to happen, and it's already starting to occur a little bit, but I believe companies will begin to thrive that specifically are their goal in creating products is to subvert this kind of tracking and this kind of surveillance. And again, there are some companies out there that are trying to create wearable tech, things that you can put on your body, that you can wear on your face, face paint, different things like that that will not allow facial tracking to occur.
Oh, like the camouflage that's used on some warships.
Exactly. And I think those kinds of companies are going to proliferate and flourish, and you're going to have ones that there are specific types of glasses that you wear that aren't actually, you know, they're not to protect you from UV rays. It's just to protect whatever light sensing camera to see to your eyes. I really think that stuff's going to proliferate.
Maybe disruptive contact lenses.
Oh, yeah.
See that being a little easier. I don't know. What do you think, Noel?
I mean, is it going to make my Snapchat filters better?
Probably, yeah.
Well, then I'm all for it.
All right.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the way we're going to end it, I think.
Well, that's how it's going. I think that's how the conversation is going to continue. You know what I mean? Because right now, here where this show is based in the United States, there doesn't seem to be an immediate threat posed by this, right? It'll be an erosion of privacy rather than a complete sudden removal. The frogs in the water slowly boil.
But we're already in the water, dudes.
We are.
We're already in the water. We're practically dead.
We're too far from shore.
I know, it's true. There's no coming back. You can't roll back the tide, despite that being an Alabama football team's logo or whatever you call it.
I still don't understand what that means.
I have no idea. What is this crimson tide?
Wait, why
we
is
speak
it?
Of and why? Oh.
I know they're rolling tides, but like why?
What? The roll tide, that means like trample the other side.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Give us your football hot takes.
And also give us your advice. This is clearly not a sustainable situation, right? Yeah. Over the long term, we don't know what's going to happen. What advice do you have for your fellow listeners? What is your take? Is this something people should be concerned about, especially in countries where their involuntary reactions can lead to their imprisonment, their physical abuse, or their death? Is this just alarmist? Is this a thing that'll be a flash in the pan and then disappear in the news cycle?
What happens when that Black Mirror episode really does come true, where if you're not looking at the ad, it pauses and you can't proceed? That's what Seth was talking about earlier.
What's your favorite Snapchat filter? The kitties? Do you like the puppy one where you stick your tongue out and then the puppy tongue comes out? How do they do that? I don't know.
Right.
Let us know. Write to us.
Is the facial recognition worth it? A lot of people say yes, you know. Let us know. You can call us directly. We are 1-833-STDWYTK. You can also contact, now that we've said all these terrible things about social media using eye tracking to learn your innermost secrets, hey, find us on Facebook along with your fellow listeners at Here's Where It Gets Crazy.
Yeah, we only use a segment of Facebook. We don't use the wider Facebook world. Yeah. We only use the Facebook group because that's better.
Yes.
That's right. And Twitter, conspiracy stuff. And Instagram, conspiracy stuff show.
You can check me out on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown if you want to see me dabbing with my kid. And I don't mean dabbing like the weed thing. I mean like the thing that you do, the dance or whatever. Yeah.
Thank God. Okay.
You can find me getting kicked into and out of various countries at Ben Bullen on Instagram. I'm at Ben Bullen HSW. On Twitter, if you've got a hot take you want to just send our way.
Yeah, and find me on Instagram. It's MayaSethBigFan24. That's the Instagram handle. You'll find it. It's
at AOL.
Yeah, sure.
What's weird is that you made that before Seth's first day.
I know. I had no idea. And it's just kismet that we're having this recording session today.
Oh, nice use of kismet, man.
There we go.
So wait, what if someone says, guys, I hate the phone. It's 2019. Real friends text. I hate social media. It's 2019. We all know there's something screwy going on there, but I have something I need to tell you, or more importantly, my fellow listeners, where can I find a way to talk to you? We have good news for you, friend. You can still send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Oh, and one last thing to mention here. On Monday, I'm going to be a guest of sorts, I guess, on the finale episode of the first season of Ephemeral. It's a newer podcast that's put out by iHeartRadio, and it's a show about ephemeral media. And in the episode, the creator and host Alex Williams and I talk about this tape that I found of my grandfather trying to record the first words of my mother. It sounds a little weird in this context, but I assure you, within the context of that show, it's going to make a lot of sense. I hope you'll listen. Find Ephemeral right now on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge the season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.